If I tell you what happened to me, you will not believe it. For I do not believe it myself. I have asked myself, how did it happen? But I cannot find the answer. What I mean is, well, look at me. Look at my clothes. They're so old, they're falling apart. And my hair, it is long and white. As white as my beard. A beard which I never had before. And my voice, it creaks like a rusty hinge. Now I ask you, does that sound like Rip Van Winkle? For that is who I am. Or who I think I am. But no. You wouldn't remember Rip Van Winkle. You're much too young. And no one remembers Rip Van Winkle anymore. Not even my dog, Wolf. Wait, I will show you what I mean. Hey, here, Wolf! Wolf! Come here, like a good dog. Yeah, you see, even he does not recognize the old man who calls himself Rip Van Winkle. But then Wolf is old, too. That is also something I do not understand. When Wolf and I started on our walk in the Catskill Mountains, he was a young dog and frisky. And that was only yesterday. Now he's old, so am I. But it couldn't have been yesterday. Are you as confused as I? Then perhaps if I went back to the beginning and told you the whole story, we might be able to find the answer to everything that happened. You know, I remember everything so clearly. The morning Wolf and I started out on our squirrel hunt. Yesterday, I mean. Or the day before that. Or whenever it was. My voice didn't creak then. And my clothes weren't in shreds. My hair, it was black. And there was no beard on my chin. With the American colonies under the rule of King George III, I lived with my wife and my two children in this village at the foot of the Catskill Mountains. And of course, there was my dog, Wolf. I remember how my wife hurried about the house that morning, fixing breakfast, helping our 5-year-old son, Rip Jr., dress, and braiding the hair of his 10-year-old sister, Judith. What a pretty child Judith was, with hair that came down to her shoulders. Oh, I can see her now, turning to wave as she ran down the road toward school that morning. And I waved back as I sat on the bench outside the kitchen door.
Rip?
Hmm?
Rip, do you hear me?
Oh, yes, my love, I hear you.
And you also hear that?
Yes, it's the cow.
Of course it's the cow, and she's hungry.
She's always hungry.
That's because you never feed her. That cow would be nothing but skin and bones if I didn't look after her, like I look after everything else around
here. I'm sorry, my love, but I forgot.
And you have also forgotten that fence that needs mending, mm-hmm. and the wood that needs chopping, mm-hmm. and the weeds that have grown taller than the cabbages.
Mm-hmm. Well, I try, but nothing seems to go right for me. I guess I just wasn't born to be a farmer, that's all.
No, you weren't born to be anything but a lazy, good-for-nothing loafer who hasn't done an honest day's work mm-hmm. in his life.
Yes, my love.
And I must have been out of my mind when I married you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think that I'm going to do all the work around this house, then you're more of a fool than I think you are.
Yes.
Now get up from that bench, Rip. I want you to take this sack of potatoes into the village and see what you can get for it. And don't let them cheat you.
No, dear.
We have to buy food with that money, Rip. Or would you like to see your family starve to death?
Of course I would.
Well, then get up and get out of here. And take that smelly dog with you.
Oh, now you've hurt his feelings.
Oh, isn't that too bad?
Come on, Wolf. Let's go to the village.
And Rip?
Yes, my dear?
Don't stop at the inn. Do you hear me?
Yes, my love. I hear you. I think everybody in the whole valley could hear my wife when she started in on me. And when she did, About the only thing I could do to get away from her was to go squirrel shooting with Wolf up into the mountains. Well, that morning, I realized my wife was angrier than usual, and I knew she'd stay that way for a long time. So I took my squirrel gun with me when I left for the village. I figured I might as well go hunting after I sold the potatoes, until my wife calmed down. Well, I sold the potatoes, but I knew my wife wouldn't think I got enough for them. She never did. Then I looked across the square at the inn, the sign hanging over the door, the one with a painting of His Majesty King George III painted on it, was swinging in the breeze, and under the big shade tree in the yard, old Nicholas Vedder was sitting with his tankard of ale. I thought about joining him. But I knew my wife would find out. So I just waved to Vedder and started up the road toward the forest. By the time Wolf and I reached the forest, I forgot about the inn and remembered only that I would have to bring home a few squirrels if I was to explain my long absence to my wife. But Wolf and I didn't see so much as one squirrel, though we climbed higher than we ever had before. It was a tiring climb, and after a while I sat down to rest. It was then that I first heard the sound. It sounded like thunder. But I knew it couldn't be, for the sun was shining and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. I decided to find out what was making such noise, and I started up the mountain again. Wolf seemed frightened or something. That's all right, Wolf, my boy. It's probably just some rocks rolling down the other side of the mountain. As I climbed higher, I suddenly found myself in a place on the mountain I'd never been before. The ground was flat and covered with pine trees that were so tall and so full that they shut out the sun. I stopped to look around me as I wondered where I was. Then I heard a sound in the underbrush. Wolf heard it too. Quiet, Wolf. It may be a squirrel. I hid myself behind a large boulder and waited. In a few moments, the bushes parted, and a man stepped out. But a most unusual man. He was less than 5 feet tall and almost as wide as he was short. He had white hair and a grisly beard, and he wore clothes like the Dutchman in the old country, a short jacket with a wide belt, knee breeches that bellowed out at the sides and were fastened with ribbons at the knees. On his head, he wore a wide-brimmed, high-crowned black hat, and he seemed to be talking to himself as he walked. He carried a small keg on his shoulder, which must have been quite heavy, because as he drew near me, he stopped, and he set the keg down on the ground. Then he took a large handkerchief from his pocket, wiped his brow, and turned toward where I was hiding.
You, Rip Van Winkle, Dummkopf, come out from there already and give me a hand.
How did you know I was there?
How did I know he was there? I knew, so I knew. Now pick up the keg already and follow me.
Where are we going?
Himmel, questions he's asking. When we get there where we are going, you will see where we are going.
What is that noise? Do you know?
Yeah, I know what it is.
If the strange little man did know what was making that noise, he didn't tell me, and I didn't ask him again. I just followed him through the pine trees, holding the cask on my shoulder. Then suddenly we came to a clearing in the trees, and I found out for myself what had been making the noise. A group of little old men, all dressed like the one whose keg I had been carrying, and all with long white beards, were bawling. It was the sound of the rolling ball that had sounded like thunder. When they saw us, they stopped. And they stared up at me without saying a word. The one at my side tugged at my coat.
So, why do you stand there, Dummkopf? Put down the keg?
Yes, of course.
Well, you can do something, right? Now come, my friends. Here is something for your thirst.
The little Dutchman drove a spigot into the bunghole of the keg. And as each of the others stepped up to the keg, he was given a cup of the mysterious liquid. I suddenly realized that I had eaten nothing since I left home, and the long climb up the mountain had made me thirsty. The little Dutchman must have realized this too, because as the last of the men filled his cup, I felt a tug on my coat.
Van Winkle,
You are thirsty, yeah?
Why, yes, I am.
So, here's a cup for you also.
Thank you. I'm also tired after my long climb. Do you mind if I sit down?
Sit, stand. It makes no difference to me.
I sat down with my back against a large fir tree. Oh, it felt good to sit and relax.
Drink, Von Winkel. Drink.
I remember hearing the little Dutchman laughing as I raised the cup to my lips and took a drink of the liquid that had been in the cask. It was something I had never tasted before, but it was very good. I took another drink, and another. And soon the cup was empty. I do not remember anything after that, for I must have fallen asleep. I do not know how long I slept, but when I awoke, I was as you see me now, old and gray. The little Dutchman, the others were gone. There was no sign that they had ever been there. I whistled for Wolf, but he didn't answer. Then I looked around for my squirrel gun, but in place of the clean, shining gun I had taken with me when I left home, there was nothing but an old, rusted firelock, its stock bleached and cracked. Was this some kind of joke I wanted? But I knew it would be no joke when I got home and had to face my wife and explain where I'd been all night. Well, I made my way down the mountain, but everything seemed different. Where I remembered trees, there was nothing but fields. Where there had been a brook, there was only dried pebbles. When I finally reached my house, there was no house. The roof had fallen in, the windows were all broken, and the door, what was left of it, was hanging on a rusty hinge. There was no sign of my wife, my children, or my dog, Wolf. There was an old, half-starved mongrel lying in the weeds which filled the doorway. But he growled when he saw me. I could not imagine what had happened since I had left home the morning before. But perhaps someone in the village could tell me. But when I reached the village, the biggest surprise of all was waiting for me. The inn was still there, but it had been changed and seemed larger. The sign over the door was changed, too. The face of King George was still there, but his red coat was now painted blue and white. In his hand, he held a sword instead of a scepter, and underneath was the name George Washington. The big shade tree was gone, and in its place was a flagpole flying a strange flag with red and white stripes and stars on it. Next to it, a young man stood on a box speaking to a group of people. I walked over to hear what he was saying.
And if we are to keep our rights as citizens, then we must vote in the coming election. Every one of us must vote. Let us not forget the heroes of 76 who fought and died on Bunker Hill, who froze at Valley Forge, who gave us our independence from England.
Independence from England? That's nothing but a rumor.
A rumor, old man? Old George III would turn in his grave if he thought that was true. Tell me, old man, how do you vote in this election?
Vote?
Yes, are you federal or Democrat?
I don't understand your words. I know nothing about federal or Democrat. I'm a loyal subject to the king.
The king? What sort of treason is this?
What? Please, you confuse me. I've come here looking for friends who are usually at the tavern.
Friends? What friends? Name them, old man.
Where's Nicholas Vedder?
Vedder? Oh, Nicholas Vedder. My father told me about him. He's been dead and buried at least 18 years.
Dead? And buried? 18 years? Mm-hmm. And Bram Dutcher?
I remember him. Joined the army at the beginning of the revolution. Never came back.
And Van Bummel, the schoolmaster?
He was in the war, too. Became a general, he did. And now he's in Congress. Who else, old man?
And Rip? Rip? Does anybody remember Rip Van Winkle?
Yes. I know Rip Van Winkle. He's my brother. That's Rip leaning against the fence over there.
But he's just a young man.
He's 25. But just as lazy as his father was.
What is your name, child?
Judith Gardiner.
And your father's name is...
My father's name was Rip Van Winkle. But he left home 20 years ago when I was just a little girl, and no trace of him was ever found.
And your mother?
My mother died years ago while she was scolding a peddler who stopped at our door. But why do you ask these questions, old man? Who are you?
Do you remember the long braids you used to have, Judith? And how your mother would tie them with red ribbons?
Yes.
And do you remember how you fell in the brook at the excitement of catching your first fish?
Yes.
And the doll you had made of cherry wood? And how your brother used to call you Jithy because he couldn't pronounce your name?
Yes, I remember. But how do you... Who are you?
Don't you know me, Judith? I'm your father.
Oh, it's Rip Van Winkle.
Young Rip Van Winkle once... Old Rip Van Winkle now. What a happy moment it was when Judith realized that I truly was her father, Rip Van Winkle. Well, I live with Judith and her husband now. I can't remember the number of times my grandchildren have asked me to tell them the story of how I went into the mountains and slept for 20 years, which to me was but a single night. And now that I have told you my story, I still don't understand how it could have happened. Do you?